This is Kay Puttock, and you're listening to Heart of Iowa, a program featuring a patchwork quilt of artists, public speakers, and people of note in central Iowa. Welcome. Today my guest is Reggie Greenlaw, local singer and songwriter.
Hi, Kay.
Thank you for coming, Reggie.
My treat.
And I'm going to ask him to just start with a song, and then we'll talk some a bit later.
But I'll just say at the beginning, he came in here with four different instruments, including a hammered dulcimer, so it's going to be exciting, I think.
Well, I hope so. In all the right ways.
All right. This song I wrote called In the Dark. I'll explain it after the tune. In the dark, I hear the sound of my own feet. In the dark, the nighttime air is sweet. In the dark, soft breezes roll downhill. In the dark, they whisper past and then fall still, and the world slows down. And the stars move round. Streetlights shine and spotlight beam on the road. And the streets stop. And the night sings. These all mutter softly about ageless time and sleep. In the dark, my curb's a ringside seat. In the dark, unlit houses line the street. In the dark, people are in bed. In the dark, dreams blow free from sleeping heads and all. Sail up on flashlight beams, spinning with the northern lights on the spoke of the Milky Way. And the dogs bark, the stars spark. Moon arcs through the night and paints the sky all shades of gray. Hear the sound of my own feet. In the dark, the nighttime air is sweet. In the dark, soft breezes roll downhill. In the dark, they whisper past and then fall still in the dark. In the dark. In the dark. Okay, this song was entitled In the Dark. It was done a few years ago when we had a rare occurrence of an aurora in Ames.
Uh-huh.
And it was at night. It was just a beautiful, warm night, later fall. We looked up, and there are some stories or legend about auroras that on a good night you should be able to hear them. And I don't think that's really true, but if they did make a sound, I'd like to think they were kind of a crystalline.
I didn't realize we even had sound. Them here. So I
yeah,
thought,
occasionally
no,
show
aurora borealis, which means in the north.
Yeah, this just happened to be especially pretty uh-huh. one with pulsing lights, green uh-huh. and aquamarine rays coming down. It was just beautiful, and I just wrote a song about what it would be like if. we could hear them, as well as how much fun it is on a warm summer night or late fall night to just walk around and you own the community or own wherever it is you are. You're alone in the world, and yet it's in a live place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, anyway, that's in the dark.
Okay, that's wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've only seen the lights like that once. We were actually swimming at night in a lake in Minnesota, and then we saw that. It was beautiful.
Yeah, I had exactly that experience, too. I was with several friends, and we were in the Boundary Waters.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just absolutely a beautiful night. Occasionally, something sticks with you your whole life off just a few moments. I was with a friend, Donald Lewis, and we were both up in the middle of the night at our campsite. We went down to the side of the lake, and we noticed that there was a beautiful aurora borealis going on. We climbed into the canoe and paddled partway out into the lake and then turned 90 degrees so we could face directly into it.
Mm-hmm.
And the water was smooth and soft enough that we had a complete circle in front of us of an aurora. And at that point, the loons started firing off, and one flew overhead, and they sound like helicopters. And between all this going on, it's just one of those things that it imprints very strongly. Can never forget it.
Oh, yes. Well, Reggie, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself? You didn't grow up in Ames, did you?
No, I didn't. I was born in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and my mother was from that area. My father was from Maine, Lebec, Maine. It's the most eastern town in the contiguous United States. And he met her at Camp McCoy in La Crosse, and we moved about every year. I went to 12 different schools growing up through the Midwest, but I always went back to Maine.
Mm-hmm.
That's where my home is mentally. A lot of people, I explain to them that there's the home you live in, and occasionally it's the home that you wish you're at, too. I love the home I live in, but when I shut my eyes and think of another place, it invariably goes back to Maine. Maybe it's just a matter of all the years I spent with it, watching the tides go up and down 18 feet, and the smell, the salt, it's...
Well, I'm your childhood, too, I guess.
It was,
especially
if
you were happy there.
Right. And every year, that was my thread. I always had that to go back to, no matter how things might have gotten strange in all the other places where I lived. My friend was that environment. So, anyway, lived through there, and now I've been an Ames resident for far longer than I've been anywhere else. This is certainly my hometown now. It's been over 30 years. My son is 33, and he was born in Huxley, and this is home.
And you teach at Ames High School.
Teach at Ames High School. It's a combination of things that I teach. I've taught many levels of special education through the years. And over the last five, I've taught English as well as special education. I wanted to have a bit of a change. It's fun to shake it up every few years and find something that's enjoyable or something that can fresh a person up. And that's what happened to me. I made very good friends. Now I have great friends in both departments. And I teach a variety of students. And it's been a really good 37 years of teaching.
Well, I'm going to ask you how you use your teaching, how you use music in your teaching. But right now, why don't you play us another song? And I'm going to, if I could have a request here, I'm going to ask you to play The World's Tallest Man. Tell us the story of how you came to write that song.
Certainly. This is a song that came from an internet headline that I thought was the best headline ever. The headline, when I was just surfing for a while, several years ago, read, "World's Tallest Man Saves Two Dolphins." And you can't read that headline and not find out more about what the story was. And it turned out it was a true story that occurred in Beijing. At the aquarium, a large aquarium in Beijing, the curators were having some trouble with some dolphins who were dying. They were not, or at least not thriving, and people couldn't figure out what was going on until they finally diagnosed that the problem was the dolphins were eating the lining off of the aquarium tank where they were being housed. And the veterinarians there didn't know how to get the plastic out of each dolphin's esophagus because it was embedded so far in that it couldn't be extracted with tools. So the dolphins were not able to eat or swallow, and hence not being able to thrive. Until one person, the one person who thought differently than everybody else, they exist everywhere, there's always one of these, slapped his head and said, "I know what we can do. We can go to Mongolia because that's the home or where the world's tallest man lives." And he was about 8 feet tall. He was indeed the world's tallest man. And with any luck, he also would have the world's longest fingers. And he could use these fingers to reach inside the dolphin's mouth and go way down and pull the extract the plastic out of their esophagus. And to the credit of the people listening to them, they thought, well, let's try it. So they called up, they got hold of the world's tallest man. I don't know how they did it inside of Mongolia, but they managed to get him to the aquarium, and they pulled each dolphin up and it would open its mouth, and the world's tallest man would look in, and he'd reach in with what turned out to be probably the world's longest fingers, and he was able to extract all the plastic out of each dolphin's esophagus, and the dolphins lived and they thrived. So the world's tallest man saved dolphins. So it's very cool.
And this is a song about the world's tallest man.
Very, very loosely, this is a song about that. I just speculate on what it would be like to be the world's tallest man in more of a mythic sense. This tallest man in this song is a bit taller than the world's tallest man, but it seemed like a fun premise. Mm-hmm. So, the world's tallest man. Well, he wakes up in the morning, opens his eyes. When he stands up, he's the first one to see the sunrise. And when he looks round him in the morning time, the whole world is way far below. He takes giant steps when he walks every day. You can see him when he's coming from a long ways away. He stands closer to heaven than most of us get. But when the rain falls, he's the first to get wet. And who knows what he's thinking way up in the air. And I wonder if it ever gets lonesome up there. And I wonder how it all looks from up where he stands, how it looks to the world's tallest man. When he's up, he provides a safe perch for the birds. They sit on his shoulder, they don't say a word. When he walks through the woods, he stands next to the trees, because he likes things that are bigger than he is. And is closer to his friends when he's sitting down. Sit in their chairs while he sits on the ground. And when he gets up, well, they all go away. And he wonders why no one can stay. And who knows what he's thinking up in the air. And I wonder if it stars, and he'll wonder if some rise and fall, but you can't touch them even if you're real tall. And who knows what he's thinking up in the air. I wonder if it ever gets lonesome up there. And I wonder how it all looks. How it looks to you.
you. That's a wonderful song.
You're so welcome.
This is Heart of Iowa, and Reggie Greenlaw, local singer and songwriter, is my guest. And I wanted to ask you how you use music in your teaching at Ames High.
I use it several different ways. With some of the populations I've had who may not be completely musical, there's still an appreciation for sounds and for rhythm and for expression. And it's kind of neat to go into a place where we have several students who are very shy or reserved, get out a bunch of drums, and just bang our heads off. And it seems to provide a lot of momentum for kids to participate a little bit more, to engage a bit more. With music, I make a point, as do a couple of the teachers at the high school who are also musicians, to offer Friday as a day where I will sing a song if they request it. If they don't request it, they don't get a song. But they usually do. They know that they can get 5 minutes out of me. That wouldn't be English class. So I'll perform something for them, and often I'll ask what genre of song they would like, or whether they'd like something soft, happy, joyful, or whatever, and they'll give me a response, and I'll play something for them. And the fact that there are teachers at the high school who do this sort of thing, and in a context of an English class, means that I think you up the odds of students doing their own creative work. Okay, if he can do this in front of us, we can probably do this too. And it's just as well. It works very well. If I make mistakes, or if I tell them that I'm correcting a line or two of something that I've written, and be open with it, they hopefully get the feeling that an English and writing class should not be a threatening place. It's a place where people can explore that creative side and know that a fraction of what is written is going to be probably good, which it's a reasonable assumption. But the writing the good is certainly worth writing the stuff that is maybe second rate.
Do they ever make specific requests for specific songs they've heard before?
There are a couple that they keep bringing back. The Beatles still live. Thank heavens for that. They enjoy that.
And also, they ask you to perform, not your own songs.
Occasionally, the Beatles will come up, and they ask. The one I've probably gotten asked the most the first few years I started doing this is a song I wrote called Magical World. And I have that in front of me. It's just speculating on what the world would be like if all of the major religions of the world were absolutely 100% accurate. First, it would be kind of confusing with many gods over here, one over here, none over there, people who live different lives, or the world sitting on a turtle. And it's also an opportunity to start talking about John Frum, who was the founder, inadvertently, accidentally, of a cargo cult. In the South Pacific, a plane crash-landed, and people had not seen a plane ever before, so they assumed it was of divine origin. And they began worshipping the plane. They started building effigies of the plane, and a person who came out of the plane, his name, they said it was John Frum, which I assume would mean I'm John from Ohio, or John from wherever he was from. But they signified it was indeed John Frum, and he was coming back bearing gifts. So they would have all these planes out. A religion was born as a result of a plane crash during World War II. So
would you like to play that song?
I'll play that song. So it's just called Magical World, and it's just probably more impressionist than anything else, what the world would be like if all these religions just were. It's a magical world. Thank you.
warm holy shrine. Angels sailing through the sky, they catch you if you fall. Someone watching over us who answers every call. And we're living in a magical world. Living in a magical world. Where the stars shine down like diamonds, the moon shines like pearls.
See why your students like that song.
Thank you, Kay.
What kind of things do you like to write songs about?
You know, it varies quite a bit from day to day and the mood that I happen to be in. Sometimes things can just be more whimsical, and I'll write just some goofy little ditty that seems to have lasting power for some reason or other. Sometimes a topic in the news will strike me as something worthy of writing some lyrics about. Fred Phelps was one a while back, for instance, and just interesting little ditties that seem worthy of. I wrote a song about what it would be like if somebody was a Rush Limbaugh conservative married to a new age hippie folk, and that was kind of a fun tune. And just thoughts go through my head, and sometimes things sound like fun, and sometimes just something I've wanted to express, and I wanted to do it more formally, in a way that would be accessible to other people. I occasionally get into Shoes You're a Little Bit Special was about a bunch of penguins who fell in love, being identical, and what it was that they saw about each other that made them seek out a certain one.
To them.
Yeah, they're certainly not identical to them. So, it's hard to say, but there's always some little muse that shows up, and occasionally it's fun to run with them and see where they go.
Sure. Well, would you like to play one of them that you've mentioned? Or one
I can.
I'm also interested in hearing some of the, like the dulcimer, if you'd like
to. Yeah, we'll do the dulcimer right after this. Uh-huh. I'll show you what that sounds like. This, again, is a song called You're a Little Bit Special.
This is the Penguin one.
The Penguin song. Uh-huh. And it was before March of the Penguins. I was very proud of myself that I seemed to be ahead of the curve that way. Again, this song is called You're a Little Bit Special. And all of us are, but we may not realize it, that we all have some little spark that's different from somebody else's. And I'll try to let the song speak for itself. I suppose it's somewhat allegorical and kind of silly,
mm-hmm.
but it does make a point. Thousand penguins sat alone through a cold and Arctic night. Each one sitting on a single egg and reading the news by the southern lights and wishing that their wives would all come home, bring along some treats. They long to see them stamp the snow off them on yellow feet. 1 month later, the ladies came ashore and they walked along the beach, pushed through blinding blizzards, couldn't screech, and they fought their way to the rock piles, to the loving baits and nets, climbed onto the stones, gave the loving fish, and snuggled into rest. The guide said, how did you know where to look for me? How did you find me here? What has it made you come to this place? Why do you sit so near? After all, I'm just one creature. We all look the same. So turn on your flame, the lady always said. Well, you're a little bit special. I just knew that's all something special about you. Certain should say quality of the difference. Yeah, I hope that you can see. Out of the million goofy little flies, bird, you're the one that's special to me. Sat in his cubicle somewhere on the 14th floor, rendering images on his screen, the fourth one from the door. His short black hair and tie was seen for many miles away, but his lonesome face was stuck in his display. And he stood in line at the vending machine, deciding what would suit her, when she cast a backward glance at Arnold, drawn on his computer. Short designer clothes from head to toes that often couldn't stop traffic. She jumped out of her skin and she walked right in when she caught a look at his graphic. And Arnold said, how did you know where to look for me? How did you find me here? What has it brought you to this place? Why do you sit so near? After all, I'm just one creature and we all look the same. What possible single feature could have soldiered on your said, well, you're a little bit special. Well, I just knew that's all something special about you. Certain set quality for the difference. Yeah, I hope that you can see. Out of a thousand computer geeks in this place, you're the one that's special to me. Now, who can say what throws a light in someone else's eyes? Something we should try to sort of analyze. Maybe we all have some seats waiting inside the room. And maybe all we need is a friend around who knows. One day it left him, he gave vegan whale, watching him wear a man of liberal views. Read his left hand, he gave vegan whale, watching him wear liberal news. Bumper stickers on his blue jean jacket, too numerous to mention. Sat alone in his recycled booth in the middle of a local Unitarian convention. He lamented the sorry state of the world and feared no one there would listen. And he spoke of the future that we could have using Eastern precognition. Then a small bearded man walked up to his booth sometime late in the afternoon and invited him later on that summer upstate in his commune. That man asked, how did you know where to look for me? How did you find me here? What has it brought you to this place? Why do you sit so near? After all, I'm just one creature, and we all look the same. Kind of tongue twisty at times, but I enjoy that too. It seems to be pretty well received.
Now it seems you're getting over certain sort of emotions or sort of attitudes in your song. Do you do that consciously?
Yeah, the attitudes develop over time, and again, I think you kind of can't help it. I was just reading a bit by Vanek today too, where he was talking about passion in writing. That if you don't have anything to write that's interesting to you, it's not going to be interesting to anybody else either. So finding things that are important, core beliefs, core values, core ideas, what do you enjoy, what's fun for you, what do you feel strongly about, if you get in touch with those, if a person gets in touch with those, they can turn into pretty good material. So that's what I like to do.
But you also do songs that are more just jokey, like the Minnesota song. I mean,
correct. Sometimes it's important to write songs just because they're goofy.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I do that. And I don't know if you want to hear that one at this point.
Well, I really like that.
I'll do that. Then I'll hit the dulcimer. This was just a song speculating on what it would be like to have Jamaicans head to Minnesota for vacation instead of going the other way around. And perhaps it would be an interesting experience for them. It would be a different world like it is for us. They can go in the summers. Minnesotans can come down to Jamaica in the winters. So it's just called Minnesota Paradise. Excuse me. To the northern part of the nation, where the weather is nice and the water like ice. Well, come with me to the Minnesota paradise. Well, we will be sure to take the extra dollar or two. Friendly native be glad to rent the grommet. Through the silence of the boundary islands, the paddle our boat will be there, afloat a lovely tour for two. Sometime if we're lucky, we will in walleye pipe. You can throw it back, put it in a fire, do what you like. Walleye on the fire, make a tasty little snack. And while you're holding me tightly, listen to the birds and the bugs appearing nightly. Mosquitoes sing its song, singing all night long. Only stop to bite you and then to bite me. Way up in the north woods, there's always something to do. Sit on you while they get big as a berry. Rainbow Woods is always my favorite region. Like talking with all the friendly Norwegian. You can hop in your car, go to the Norwegian bar, pick a
local gas station. The windy weather is nice, and the water like ice. On the way to the Minnesota paradise.
It's a goofy song. It's just plain goofy. So,
you really got that Jamaican accent down.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, I think if anybody is Jamaican, they'd probably disagree. But
sounds
just do something. Yeah. So anyway, I'll knock around on the hammer dulcimer for people who have not seen a hammer dulcimer. Or you're not going to see one here, obviously, but you won't be able to hear one. It's a trapezoidal shaped instrument. It goes back a long, long time. It's speculated by some people that it was in the Middle East originally, probably in Iraq. It was a Persian instrument and called a santur. It's still called a santur in many parts of the world. About 1300, it's guessed the Crusaders came through and saw a lot of santurs and thought they were pretty cool. So they grabbed a bunch and did what Crusaders did over that time too, returned to the middle of Europe and spent the next 100 years covering them up and putting pedals and keys on them and turning them into pianos.
It's like a piano without.
It's a piano turned inside out without hammers and no middleman. It's strings that are just directly hit by the hammers, and as a result, it makes a very lovely sound, really organic tone, and it carries well. It's used instead of bagpipes in some regions because it depends heavily on drones. It has a different name all over the world: Yangqin in China, Hochbrett in Switzerland, which means butcher block, which is kind of what it looks like. Again, santur, it's cymbalum, it's the national instrument of Hungary. Irish have this and played it for a long time. In America, it was called a lumberjack piano because it was much easier to carry from one timber area, timber area to another.
Well, this is a big one. I've seen those that are about this big.
They continue to evolve.
Yeah.
They were small, about 40 strings, and this is about triple the size of that. So it's better than a yard wide at the bottom and better than a foot and a half long at the top, trapezoid, and a fairly wide range of strings. So it plays in several keys. But again, it depends heavily on drones. At least I do. I depend on drones a lot. And it's good for many types of instruments. It's a great ambient sound, and it's percussive. If you're a little bit ADD, it's a really good instrument to have.
You can get
your yayas out and be fairly aerobic with it.
Yeah, and if people are used to seeing that kind of dulcimer I'd seen before, which is like a little, like almost like a small violin in size. But this is a big, as Reggie said, a trapezoidal instrument, and he brought it in two parts. It's got a big stand that he brought in separately. And now it's set up. It takes up quite a lot of space. It's almost like a small piano.
Yes, that's correct.
But he carried it in here, so in parts.
So they are portable to a point. Yeah, the other dulcimer you're talking about is an American instrument, an Appalachian dulcimer.
Right.
They were invented in the Appalachian.
But they're the same principle on a smaller scale.
Yeah, smaller scale. And this is just more ancient, more international. Everybody has one, and most people think they invented it. So that's how it is. But I'll play a tune on it so people can get the idea of what it sounds like. See this variation on a old tune called Red Haired Boy, loosely based on a tune called Red Haired Boy. Thank you. There are two different ways to play it. One is with a muted side. I use Dr. Scholl's mole pads to moleskins to make a muted sound, which I do when I'm in the house so I don't get chased out of it by my family. And the other side is brighter, which I do when I'm playing outdoors, for instance, mm-hmm. at a Renaissance festival.
Mm-hmm. So, and this time you were doing what, the muted? Or?
There was a muted side.
Okay.
And then the brighter side is obviously quite a bit louder.
So you're going to play with a different tuning now?
A little bit different. What I'll play now, let me think, is I'll just do The Water Is Wide, Irish tune.
Okay. Sing to the dulcimer, do you?
Usually I don't. I'm not happy with the way my voice sounds with it. Some voices match well, And some instruments match well with the hammered dulcimer. I don't feel that my voice is one that necessarily does that.
Okay.
So other people have sung with it, and it sounds great.
Uh-huh.
The best two instruments, I think, in creation that were made for each other would be a hammered dulcimer and a harp. Absolutely
right.
Wonderful together. Harp is muted, and the sustain isn't very long, and it's a very soft tune where it's just this bright with lots of sustain, and they're just complementary. They just really fit perfectly
uh-huh.
with each other.
Actually, thinking about you instruments and teaching, it struck me that when you're teaching, a guitar is a nicer instrument maybe than a piano because
mm-hmm.
you can face the students while you're playing.
And you can mirror what that person
right.
is doing. Particularly
well,
if I'm playing
piano, especially an old upright piano, you more or less have your back turned to them.
Absolutely. Yeah, guitar is a much better instructional instrument.
Yeah.
No doubt
but
about
now
it.
With this, they could still see you when you're playing.
Correct. And the nice thing about hammered dulcimer is it's for those who are musical in the listening audience, it's a multiple diatonic instrument. It's several diatonic scales that go together. And what that means is, in a diatonic scale, which is do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, if the wrong note is hit within that scale, it's not really that wrong.
And it looks very beautiful.
It's a lot of fun to perform
yeah.
on. And it's nice. Nobody can see it in the middle of it. There's a sound hole, and there's a rosette in the sound hole with the figure of a mayfly in it.
Oh, I wondered what that was.
The point of the mayfly is just allegorical.
Uh-huh.
Mayflies, where I come from, in La Crosse, Wisconsin, are very abundant. They're called June bugs up there because they hatch a little bit later. But there's one point in late spring where billions upon billions of these creatures hatch out from the Mississippi River, and they're in such numbers that they can be viewed from space on radar. And I remember being a kid seeing inches of mayflies all over the streets, and occasionally snowplows would have to go on the Mississippi River Bridge, dead ones.
Yeah.
They live 24 hours,
mm-hmm.
and snowplows would have to take them off the streets.
Wow.
And mayflies live after they have hatched out about 24 hours. They don't have mouths or any digestive systems. They're strictly up there to go, hey baby, and find
mate,
and then they
don't eat at all?
No, they don't eat. When they hatch out, that's purely for procreation.
Yeah.
And then they hatch, and you can't catch fish for weeks.
So did you have this dulcimer made specially for you? With
this one was, yes it was. There's a man, his name is James Jones,
uh-huh.
and he lives in West Virginia. And he makes them one by one and asks what kind of wood you want on it and what special appointments you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes them to spec, so it was really fun to have something like that done.
Okay.
So there are about three holes that you can't see very well, but the
okay.
sound comes out of, and it also just resonates off of the soundboard, which is quite big.
Well, thank you for playing that.
You're so welcome.
I think that might be the first time I've heard one like that. Would you like to do another song now?
I'll play another song. Let's see, what am I going to...
I should say that my guest is Reggie Greenlaw, a local singer-songwriter, and this is Heart of Iowa.
I'm going to play a song that I wrote a while back that I like. It's one of my favorites that I've written. It's called The Last Sweetheart's Waltz. It's just speculating about somebody who was... They knew the relationship was over, but they were still going to have one last dance, a waltz. So, Last Sweetheart's Waltz. Lost in the music, three-quarter time. No words to be said, no reason or rhyme. The stars all come out, and the moon rolled across. We were dancing to the last sweetheart's waltz. The waltz is forever, the music goes on. The night was all over except for the song. They said it might happen, but I never thought we'd be dancing to the last sweetheart's waltz. Some loads were heavy to carry, and I didn't want to move on. Didn't want it to be over. Didn't feel like we'd been there too long. I didn't want to move on.
want it to be over. It seemed like we'd been there too long. So I'd like a whisper, I'd like a breeze, up like a nighthawk circling the trees. It ain't that nice, but let's give it no thought. Just dance to the last sweetheart's waltz.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
One last question. You mentioned once that you'd like to go busking around Europe, I think you said.
Yeah,
busking.
I'd kind of like just to go busking anywhere.
Uh-huh.
Okay, it's a fun thing to do. I get a taste for that every year or so when I go up to the Minnesota Renaissance Festival and perform mm-hmm. there. It's a glamorized busking up there. There are a lot of people who are willing to part with their money. And once they drink enough mead, they're willing to do that. And I play my dulcimer and I sell CDs and... It's fun just to perform for small groups of people. The dulcimer lends itself to interaction. Mm-hmm. It's not an instrument that's played up on a stage. It's an instrument that I feel should be played next to people. They can ask questions, and I can play, and they can enjoy what they're hearing. I can give them some history on it. Taking it to different venues is just a nice way to travel. Mm-hmm. It's fun to go places and bump into people who haven't heard a dulcimer before or heard the guitar before, played with songs that I've written at least, and it keeps a person fresh. Mm-hmm. It's 1-to-1, 1-to-several, 1-to-20, 1-to-30, rather than on a large stage performing for a lot of people. Not that that isn't fun, but it's more intimate to actually interact with people as I'm playing.
Right, sure. Well, thank you so much for coming in today.
You're so welcome.
It's been wonderful.
Wonderful.
I hope this is one of many such little concerts that we have.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And
bring me back. This is fun.
And this is Heart of Iowa, and we're listening to the music of Reggie Greenlaw, local singer and songwriter who also teaches at Ames High School. Thank you.
You're so welcome, Kate.
And thank you for listening.
Well, we're never moving.